You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by the MLB.com Shop.
Hello, everybody. This is MLB.com Extras, American League West Edition. I'm Anthony Kastrovitz, pinch hitting for Dave Raymond this week. Thanks for tuning in. We're going to talk to all the beat writers from the West. We're going to talk to Brian McTaggart about an Astros team that has had a really rough week, but also a very busy week with the call-up of Carlos Correa and Vincent Velasquez, not to mention having four of the top 46 picks in the draft. We'll talk to T.R. Sullivan about the Rangers, who are pushing those Astros in the West. And we'll talk to Alden Gonzalez about the Angels as they try to get their offense going. And speaking of trying to get the offense going, that's been the story all season for the Seattle Mariners, as Greg Johns will discuss. And finally, the Oakland A's. Is it time to push the sell button? We'll talk to Jane Lee about that. Thanks for tuning in. Here we go. I am pleased to be joined by Brian McTaggart. And Tag, busy week for the Astros. Not a productive week on the field, but a very busy week in general between the draft and a couple big call-ups. Let's start with the call-ups. Let's start with Carlos Correa, obviously a young man we've heard a lot about for what feels like a long time. He's drafted 3 years ago, number one overall. And, you know, he looked ready for the stage. His first home run was no wall scraper. That was a blast and a half. What are your early impressions of Correa, both on and off the field here?
Well, I don't think anybody's surprised, certainly not me, that he's come up and looked comfortable and contributed. I mean, I've just been very impressed with him since day one, since they drafted him. His demeanor, his work ethic, just the way he goes about his business, very impressive kid. And to come up and just, leave a mark right off the bat. He's got hits in all three games, hit the ball hard, hasn't looked overmatched at all, looks very comfortable, and he's a game changer, and he's, you know, I think he's got a chance to be an MVP down the road, but early on he's been great. And, you know, I think it kind of helps that he made his debut on the road. There was a lot of attention on him for sure, but I think at home it might have been a little bit of a zoo. I mean, he would have handled that fine too, but I think he's looked great so far, and it's just going to be really interesting now that with Carlos at short, what do they do when Jed Lowry comes back? I mean, that's a month away, but... There's no doubt they have to have him up here playing shortstop, and he's here and he's playing well.
Yeah, it's great to see him comfortable. And a lot of organizations, you know, they would always err on that side if they can bringing up a key prospect like that on the road. And so kind of two debuts in that sense. But what do they think is going to be the biggest adjustment for Correa? As the league does catch up to him at some point, like it does with everybody, what's going to be the big key for him?
Yeah, I think that's going to be it. And just, you know, facing the caliber of pitching he's going to be facing. I mean, his first game, you know, he faced Chris Sale, not an easy task. Second game, Carlos Rodon. And he's got Felix Hernandez on Friday night when he makes his home debut at Minute Maid Park. So he's seeing some arms that he's never seen before. Because you got to remember, before this year, he had barely played above Class A. So he had a month in Double A. He had a couple of weeks in Triple A. So all of a sudden, here he is facing Felix Hernandez on Friday night. So he's going to have to adjust to facing these guys over and over and what they do to him, and once they get a more scouting reports and so forth. But, you know, like I said, this guy is so impressive, and he's got such a great work ethic. I don't think he's going to have much problems. And he surrounded himself. It's really interesting. I was talking to him about he's really got his whole team of people that are going to travel with him to Houston. I think at least for a little bit. He's got his own hitting coach, got his own defensive coach, his own trainer, his own strength conditioning coach that are in Puerto Rico in the offseason. They help him, and they've been with him here the first few days. He gets his feet wet in the majors. You know, they're eventually going to go back to Puerto Rico, but that's how bad this guy wants to succeed. I mean, he's got a team of people helping him, and for 20 years old, his maturity is just off the charts. And it's going to be fun to watch him make these adjustments against some of the top pitchers in the game.
Absolutely, yeah. King Felix will be a very much welcome to the big leagues kind of moment for the kid. Another welcome to the big leagues moment, Vincent Velasquez made his debut against the White Sox on Wednesday night. And, you know, Correa, you could kind of get a sense tag that was coming before long. But with Velasquez, that really seemed to catch people off guard. Were you surprised by that move, the proactive nature of that move?
Yeah, I was. If you would have told me 2 weeks ago, I would have been shocked. But in the days leading up to it, you could get the sense that they were really high on Velasquez, the same way they were with McCullers a couple of weeks ago. Now, if you would have started the season and say, hey, pick a pitcher at Double A who's going to make his debut this year, I think everyone would have said Mark Appel. And, you know, here Appel has watched two guys in the rotation with him now get to the big league. So maybe kind of a wake-up call for him. But Velasquez is a lot like McCullers. He's a hard thrower. He's fearless. He came up, pitched five scoreless innings, walked three guys, and it didn't faze him. Three of them were leadoff walks, and they didn't bother him at all. And I think that's what the Astros are looking for, that kind of mentality. He's got the stuff, middle of the rotation, maybe top of the rotation guy, if he can stay healthy. That's been the big knock on him so far. But, you know, he's another young power arm they have in the rotation. So if you look at the rotation now, they have two guys that were in Double A to start the year. Probably not what they envisioned, of course, with Feldman getting hurt and some of the other injuries they've had. But if they can come up here and throw like they have, and McCullers has been great through five starts too, then, you know, I think they'll take it.
Yeah, McCullers has been tremendous. Both of those guys, as you mentioned, they come up without throwing a pitch at Triple A, and I don't know if that's a new trend. I don't know if that qualifies as courage or desperation tags, but it's certainly been fun to watch both those guys come up. Velasquez had a really nice start his first time out, five scoreless innings. But what's your sense with that club right now? The rotation was seen as maybe their one area of vulnerability a little bit. They've obviously addressed that by calling up some guys in-house. But right now the offense has been so stagnant in the midst, as we record this, they're in the midst of a seven-game losing streak. So what's your feel of the club right now as it really endures its first taste of adversity here in 2015?
Yeah, this is the first time they've gone through this. I mean, they were 14 games over 500 a week ago. Now they're seven games over. But I think a lot of people, if you look at this club and watch it, you could see this might be coming a little bit. They were living and dying on the home run, and that's, you know, really probably not a great way to go through a whole season. And when they hit two or three home runs, they usually win. And when they don't, they're in trouble. And the last week, they're just guys like Gattis and Carter just aren't hitting the long balls like they were earlier. George Springer had five hits in the last game against the White Sox, but they were all singles. And then Altuve's in a slump hitting behind him. So Springer has nowhere to go because Altuve is not putting the ball in play. So they have a lot of streak hitters. You know, Carter's a streak hitter. We saw that last year. Gattis, very streaky, got off to a terrible start, then got really hot, pulled off a little bit. And guys like Jason Castro really haven't come around this year. So, I think, yeah, you wonder if they're going to bolster their rotation before the trade deadline. But now you have to wonder offensively. They could use another bat. And maybe, you know, I really think they missed Jed Lowrie a lot because he was one of the guys who didn't strike out a lot. He put the ball in play, had a little bit of pop, but he's the guy in your lineup that just kind of bridges you from one guy to the other, and they don't have that many guys. And if Altuve's not hitting, he's down to 289, then you're really in trouble. So, it's a streaky offense. It's an all-or-nothing offense. So for the last week, it's been pretty tough going.
Yeah, high power, high strikeout lineups are going to go through slumps like this, no question. Hopefully the Astros can ride it out and maintain a good standing there in the AL West. That's really it's looking more deep now with the Angels have played. They played a little bit better going into June, and obviously the Rangers have played extraordinarily well the last 5-6 weeks. But, you know, what we know, one big impetus behind the Astros rising up to first place in the first place was what they did in the draft and drafting high prominent picks the last few years here. And this year they had two of the top five, four of the top 46 picks, so a nice haul for them. Tags, how do they feel about how they came out with those four picks especially?
Well, they feel pretty good. They ended up drafting three of the top seven draft prospects by MLB.com, which is, you know, pretty incredible. Yeah, they had two and five, but then they got Daz Cameron, the outfielder, son of Mike Cameron, a little with their third pick in the draft. And, of course, there's signability issues and all that. But, of course, the Astros have the largest draft pool of anybody, over $17 million. So if any team can spend some money to sign him, I think it'll be the Astros. And I think they're pretty confident they're going to be able to sign him. So we saw last year they took Aiken and they didn't sign him. But if they can get these top three guys, Alex Bregman, the shortstop from LSU, and Cameron, and Efferman they took in the second round as well. If they can sign these top four picks, get them in the system, get them going, they should be in really good shape. They took a lot of college players. You know, I think they're going to that trend like some teams are. They like guys who are fast movers, come up and help. And You know, Correa makes his debut this year, and McCullers makes his debut, Velasquez. They were all high school draft picks. So the high school guys can move quickly in this system too. But it's a deep system. But guys like Bregman, if he comes in here, he can move up quickly if he produces. And I think they have to be encouraged by looking at the way they've bumped up guys, even at Double A. That kind of Astros are still the land of opportunity for minor leaguers when you get in here and you play well and perform. They're not afraid to push you.
Is the Bregman-Correa dynamic one that's one of those we'll cross that bridge when we come to it. We hope to cross that bridge and hope both those guys are what we think they can be as far as them both being shortstops.
Yeah, that's the thing. That's a couple of years down the road maybe, and that'd be a good problem to have if you have a superstar player in Correa and a can't miss prospect in Bregman. Then what do you do? And you know, there's been talk about Correa might wind up at third anyway. I really haven't heard that from anyone within the Astros, but just looking at his body type and style, you know, he's 6'4". I mean, he's compared to A-Rod, and I think those comparisons are fair just with the way their bodies are. So, and Bregman has played at some other positions too earlier in his career. So the Astros picked what they thought was the best player available. Kind of ironic that they take a shortstop with their first pick on the day Correa makes his debut. But as you know, Anthony, I mean, you can't, you know, you can't draft for two or three years down the road. You just got to take the best player now. And if there's injuries, there's trades, who knows what could happen. And if they have a top-notch prospect at short, if he can't get to the major leagues and because you have a star player, that's not a bad problem to have.
Absolutely. And now the draft is over. We naturally shift our eyes to the trade market. That's what general managers do here in the week after the draft. They're time and attention goes full time to evaluating other systems and seeing what is out there. You mentioned earlier, Tags, it does seem like as much as the offense is struggling right now, it does seem like a starting pitcher would probably be the most likely solution for them in the trade market. Especially knowing, I mean, Velasquez and McCullers, there might be some innings caps involved there. So do you sense that? Yeah, I wrote this column last week for MLB.com advocating Cole Hamels to the Astros. Got a lot of mixed opinions, to say the least, from Astros fans on that one. Some love it, some hate the idea. But I would say it's probably safer to assume that if they do go out and get a starter, it would be more in the second tier than a top-tier guy like that.
Yeah, I would think so. Guys like Johnny Cueto, Scott Kazmir, you know, free agents at the end of the year, maybe they can you know, get a couple of months out of them. Hamels is interesting because, yeah, you'd be getting him for a couple more years, you know, at massive money. But, you know, at the end of the year, they might want to explore some pitchers in the free agent market anyway. Maybe you make a trade for Hamels and you satisfy that need as well. We do know they have the prospects to get a deal like that done. And, you know, I get emails all the time from fans. Well, what do we have to give up to get Cole Hamels? And they throw out names of, you know, Domingo Santana and Singleton. And I'm like, well, you know, it's going to take more than that. I mean, the Phillies are going to want your, you know, three or four of your top prospects, and it's going to hurt. Even getting a second-tier guy, I think they're going to have to give up a prospect or two. But that's the luxury of having a deep farm system. But, I think even with the unknown of McCullers and Velasquez, I think they have to go out there and get another pitcher. Feldman's going to come back after the All-Star break. But if you can put another guy in there to slide in behind McHugh and Keuchel, and now you have Feldman and then one of these young kids, you have a chance to have a pretty good rotation down the stretch.
All right, there you have it. Brian McTaggart does a great job for Astros.com. I am joined by T.R. Sullivan. T.R., thanks for doing this. We're going to catch up on a Rangers club that, as we record this, has won 16 out of 22. They are making a real push there in the AL West, especially with the Astros having a really tough week. So just your general sense as things get a little more real here, we get deeper into the standings and deeper into the season, and then they make this rise up the standings. Is it starting to feel real in that clubhouse?
Well, Anthony, I think they feel a lot better about themselves than they did at the end of April when they were struggling. And I think that, you know, guys are starting to play more towards their track record and their usual level. The starting pitching has been stabilized. Wandy Rodriguez has done a fantastic job for the Rangers and really helped them this rotation. I think he's really been the guy that's been overlooked, but has just done a terrific job. I think they've really fixed their bullpen. Having Sean Tolleson as a closer has been huge for them. He's really made that bullpen much better in the last 6 weeks. Offensively, you know, they're scoring runs. Delino DeShields has given them a big boost at the leadoff spot. So right now things are going good. They're not going great. They still have a lot of things to deal with, but right now things are going good.
Absolutely. And Wandy, actually just a column for Sports on Earth, shameless self-promotion there, but kind of identifying 10 guys who were really low-profile signs or trades from the offseason. Wandy, of course, was signed by the Rangers just at the start of the season. But, you know, guys who have small deals that have paid big dividends, and that's been a big one for them. This guy really, he doesn't make the Braves rotation. He has a nice spring, but, you know, can't crack the rotation of a Braves team that's rebuilding. And so you kind of wonder where his career is at this point. He gets this opportunity here. What's been the key for him to really seize that opportunity and do what he's done?
Anthony, he's got just a great curveball. Every time I see that curveball, it may be the best pitch on the team as far as secondary stuff. He's just throwing it for strikes. You know, hitters are just struggling to hit it. You know, he can locate his fastball, move the fastball around, all those neat things. But that curveball is just a plus pitch. I don't know. I can't remember. I'd have to go back to Aaron Seeley to see a curveball like that on the Rangers. And he's just using it well.
And he's got a teammate, a fellow competition for comeback player of the year in Prince Fielder, of course. We'll see how that all shakes out as the season goes along here. Sticking with the rotation, TR, Derek Holland, I know he's started to throw from 90 feet, but it also sounds like his timetable, I know at one point they were saying maybe early July, now it sounds like more like late July. Is that correct?
No, it's going to be August. Last year he didn't come back till September, and he may end up pushing that. And I know he's out there bouncing off the walls, but the Rangers are real concerned about this shoulder and this muscle. It's a similar injury to what Jerks and Profar had, and he's missed 2 years because of it. The Rangers did not want to mess around with this, so they're gonna make sure it's 100% healed before they let him get up on the mound. And once he gets up on the mound, you're talking about 6 to 8 weeks. So, you know, today we're here almost in the middle of June, so it's going to be August before he's ready.
Well, in the meantime, we mentioned Wandy has stepped up, and young Chichi Gonzalez has also stepped up. And you mentioned Wandy's curveball, and I saw you had this note the other day that Gonzalez got a couple outs in his three-hit shutout last week. He got a couple outs with a curveball that he didn't even have in spring training. What's behind the development of that pitch and the development of Gonzalez in general?
Well, I think it's not so much that he's added a curveball, Anthony, as much as he's willing to try something different. He's willing to add pieces to his arsenal. He's willing to make adjustments. This is a really smart kid. He really has a good feel for pitching for a young guy. He locates the ball well. He keeps the ball down well. Just being able to throw a curveball that quickly, I mean, it's not like Wandy Rodriguez or Burt Blyleven or anything like that, but it just shows you that he has the aptitude to pick it up quickly and the mental toughness to not be afraid to throw it.
Well, some other guys coming in the system now to develop like Chichi has. What's your general, first of all, your general takeaway from the draft here this week, TR? What was their area of emphasis, or what do you take as the trend, I guess, for the Rangers in this year's draft?
They swung for the fences. That's the headline on the Rangers draft. They swung for the fences. I mean, they had the fourth overall pick, and they got Dylan Tate, a kid from UC Santa Barbara, who's one of the best pitchers in the draft, and that's the easy part. Then they took another kid with their third-round pick, Mike Machuella. I'm sure I'm not pronouncing it right. Michael Machuella. Long story short, he was at Duke. He was a big-time prospect. You know, he's pitching with a congenital back condition. And then he came down with Tommy John surgery. He had it April 14th. He's 2 months away from that. A big arm, big potential. Rangers are going to try to rehab him through it, and hopefully if they get him through it and he's healthy, you know, they could come away from this draft with two number one type starters. That's what they're hoping for. Jake LeMoyne, their fourth round guy, same thing. Shoulder injury at Houston, still has a big arm, big potential. guy who fell in the draft because of his injuries. Now another guy they're going to try to rehab through his problem. If they get him through it, you know, they could come away with three guys out of this draft who could be, you know, frontline starting pitchers. As always, it took some young kids out of high school that, you know, obviously high ceiling, high potential. You know, you don't know if it's ever going to pan out or not. A lot of these kids don't. But the Rangers have a pretty good feeling about those guys.
Well, what's your thought on the Rangers here? As we do, now the draft is over, obviously attention turns more towards the trade deadline. You know, they're patching it together pretty well in the rotation here so far, but do you think that – and they got guys like Holland who could impact the club in the second half, but do you see them maybe going out and getting a starter? Do you see them being proactive in general in the trade market as we sit here today? What's your overall sense of how that might shake out?
Well, you know, they may need another starter. Right now their rotation is solid. They got Gallardo, Colby Lewis, Nick Martinez, Wandy Rodriguez, Alex Gonzalez. So they have five good starters who are pitching well right now. They don't have a lot of depth behind that. You know, Holland's going to be a while. Matt Harrison's going to be a while. You know, Martin Perez might be ready by the All-Star break. You know, if they go out and get another starter, they're going to have to give up more prospects. And, you know, that's what they've been doing for 4 years. And that's, you know, it took them a while to get their farm system back up to the level it is now. You know, everybody talks about Cole Hamels. That's everybody's favorite name out there. I'm sure there's others out there. Scott Kazmir might be a guy. Who knows? Again, you have to unload the farm system. You have to unload a bunch of good players, and it's going to just – your farm system's going to take another big step back, and I don't know if one starter's going to put them over the top. This is a very this is probably the most mediocre year I've ever seen in baseball as far as the quality of teams, especially in the American League. You know, I haven't seen the Cardinals that much, but over here in the American League, as you know, this is a very mediocre league. It's just not there's not a great team out there. So, you know, you can always say, hey, you know, if we get a Cole Hamels, we get this guy, you know, he can put us over the top. And that's plausible because this league is so mediocre. But, again, you're going back to the same old syndrome of just, you know, depleting your farm system.
No, I agree, TR. You know, you always see vulnerability on you can point out vulnerability on even great teams, I guess. So they pick out a bench spot or something, but – but this year, you're right. Even the teams that have really led the charge here, talking about the Astros or the Royals, there's definite high areas of vulnerability on both of those clubs in general. So the Rangers are doing their best to run down those Astros in the AL West. I want to thank T.R. Sullivan for joining us to talk about that. Pleased, as always. Anytime I get to talk to Alden Gonzalez, it's a good day. Let's bring in Alden Gonzalez to talk about these Halos. And they've had a rough patch here. It's really been an erratic team, Alden. Win five in a row, lose six in a row. And a lot of that comes down to the offense itself being erratic. You got, you know, Mike Trout, Albert Pujols, Eric Ibar. I mean, they get hot, but it doesn't seem like they ever get hot at the same time. Has that kind of been the trend this season?
Yeah, Anthony, this is, I mean, it's been pretty clear through the first two-plus months of the season that this is just not the offense from last year. I mean, and it's easy to say because they don't have Howie Kendrick in the middle of the lineup. Josh Hamilton's gone, and even though he struggled so much his last 2 years, he was at least a presence in the middle of the order. I mean, they've been salvaging for runs pretty much all year, and they've become a team that's just completely reliant on their starting rotation to pitch well. And I think we saw it over their most recent five-game losing streak. I mean, pretty much the entire year, the rotation had carried them. They've kept their heads above water because they've received good starting pitching. Then they go on this five-game losing streak where the rotation has an ERA over 10, and they lose every game because they can't really score the runs on a consistent basis to support their starting pitchers. And it's become pretty clear, even though nothing has happened yet, that eventually Jerry DePoto is going to have to make some major moves here. He's going to really have to address the offense. He's got to go out on the market. He's got to get a left-handed bat. He's to play left field. He's got to get another option at DH. You know, it's funny, Anthony, because around this time last year, everybody was freaking out about the Angels' bullpen, and everybody was saying, how are the Angels going to possibly win with this bullpen? This bullpen keeps losing these games. Jerry DePoto goes out. He gets Jason Grilley in a deal that wasn't really talked about in June. Jason Grilley was actually pretty good for them down the stretch. Then in late July, he makes a big move for Houston Street, and it changes the entire dynamics of their team. They go on to win 98 games, and they become really one of the most dominant teams in baseball. Jerry DePoto has to do that again with the offense now. He can't really do it because the added wild card has created a situation where everybody's pretty much 2 weeks away from being back in the race. But eventually, some bats are going to come open. The Angels have payroll flexibility. They do have some intriguing pitching prospects to trade from, and that's just how they're going to have to do it this year. They have to go to the outside to get some bats.
It's going to be difficult. As we know, I mean, you can remake a bullpen on the fly. An offense is a lot harder to remake in this environment where run scoring is depressed, and as you mentioned, so many teams are in the hunt. So Mr. DePoto has his work cut out for him there. He did. I give him credit. The second base situation looked pretty shaky going to spring training, and Johnny Giovitella has turned out to be a nice – it's not an upgrade over Howie Kendrick by any means, but, hey, to get league-average production and defense from him in that spot has been a nice way to fill that hole.
Yeah, I don't know if this is good or bad, but, you know, where would the Angels be without Johnny Giovitella? You know, he's been kind of a revelation of sorts. He's you know, the big knock against him was always his defense. He's actually, you know, he is not an elite best player by any means, but he makes the plays he's supposed to make for the most part. And, you know, you can – this lineup could be fine with Johnny Giovitella hitting in the number nine spot of the order, you know, bunting guys over every once in a while. He's gotten some pretty big hits for them. You know, a lot of people argue whether or not that's sustainable. But the bottom line is he's doing his job. The problem is that Chris Iannetta is still hitting below 200. Matt Joyce hasn't really done anything for them this year. And as you mentioned at the top, you know, Ibar, Calhoun, Albert, Trout, they've each had their individual hot streaks here and there. They haven't really been able to couple them together.
Yeah, and those 7 through 9 spots have been a black hole, really. A 575 OPS from the bottom three. So that just puts all the more emphasis on what those guys early in the order are doing.
Yeah, and C.J. Cron, too. I mean, C.J. Cron was a guy that they were relying on to, you know, be a big bat for them at DH when Josh Hamilton was gone. He hasn't been able to figure it out in the major league level either. And you know, the hallmark of his team last year was depth in their lineup. They just don't have that.
But with David Fries ailing at the moment with his hamstring, they made a proactive move at third base, calling up a guy who probably wasn't expected to contribute until 2016. Tell me a little about Kyle Kubitsa.
Yeah, Kyle Kubitsa is a guy they got in the offseason just because the Angels organization is big on their organizational depth charts and having that next guy in line. People feel like Jerry DePoto loves the free agent market just because he went out and got Josh Hamilton and Albert Pujols. You know, those moves were kind of done from the ownership level. Jerry DePoto does not like going out and venturing into the free agent market every time there's a need. I mean, it's really a very volatile way to run a roster. He's always trying to get guys next in line, guys through the system. You know, the Angels system has been devoid of prospects for a while, so he went out and traded for Kyle Kubitsa over the offseason. He got him for a really intriguing 17-year-old lefty named Aaron Sanchez. And, you know, they're just hoping that he could be ready by the time David Fries hits the free agent market. And you know how these things go, Anthony. I mean, sometimes they just don't pan out the way you want them to. But, you know, he's a big kid. He's got a nice gap-to-gap swing. He's kind of a doubles hitter. He's got a great arm. He's still trying to figure it out defensively, but you know, a lot of the scouts I talk to, they like his strike zone recognition and they like his ability to go the other way on pitches and things like that. It was a really interesting debut for him on Wednesday. He got a couple of hits, but he made a couple of rookie mistakes. You know, two outs early in the game, he made a nice backhand stop on a grounder, and instead of throwing the first for the last out, he gets the other runner in a rundown and a run scores before he makes that out. And then he gets thrown out going second to third when in an inning where he could have actually scored that run, and they lose by a run. So, you know, it was a really bittersweet debut for him. I don't know how long he's going to be up there. I would imagine that when David Fries is healthy, Kyle Kubitsa goes back to AAA. But who knows? I mean, he's a guy that the scouts have told me that could maybe play a little first base, that can maybe play a little bit of left field. If he could give them a spark in left field, as a left-handed bat because the Angels have struggled so much against right-handed pitching, they'll take it. I mean, look, the Angels tried to fix it with Kirk Nieuwenhuis the other day. They picked him up off waivers, and then they designated him for assignment a couple of days ago. He was on the roster for like 2 weeks. They're trying anything they can to be better against right-handed pitching right now.
Well, you mentioned, Alden, you got to have the system in place, the farm system in place, because you can't be going out and signing every free agent, you know, patching holes that way. You can't always get in the midseason trades and try to fix holes that way. And in that vein, the first-year player draft this past week, the Angels had an interesting approach there, a conscious decision on their part. They took 8 of their first 10 picks were position players, and as we mentioned, with run scoring depressed in general, I think there are a few teams that kind of took this approach this year. How did they feel? What was the takeaway from that draft and how it panned out for them?
Yeah, I mean, they said it going in. We kind of expected it, that they were going to go after position player talent, and that's exactly what they did. You know, when Jerry Dipoto took over, a lot of the top prospects that they had pretty much graduated already, and you could see there was kind of this window where it was going to be time to really replenish the system. And you know, they were ranked last by Baseball America back-to-back years. And, you know, they had a plan in place for how they were going to do this. You know, Jerry Dipoto turned in some really successful farm systems in Arizona. And the way that they wanted to do it was they wanted to get the pitching first, because pitching is the more valuable commodity in this game. It takes longer to develop. So we saw in 2013, 2014, they really hit hard on the pitching. And now they actually, you know, they have some pretty nice starting pitching depth. So this was a draft where they wanted to attack the position player part of the field. And, you know, as you said, it's true. I mean, there's not much offense in this game right now. You take what you can get. But, you know, they're trying to achieve balance in their farm system, and I think they feel like they're getting there. And, you know, an interesting thing about the Angels is, you know, their current front office group is completely different from when Eddie Bain was a scouting director. Eddie Bain was a guy who took a lot of chances and actually hit on a lot of high upside high school talent. You know, he took, I mean, pretty much half of his picks when he was a scouting director were high school guys. This Angels front office group does not go after high school prospects. Jerry Dipoto calls them the red balloon. He says, don't chase the red balloon. That's kind of one of his monikers to scouts, which means, don't get so caught up in this toolsy 18-year-old kid that you miss out on these collegiate guys that have the skills that can translate to the major leagues. And I think that applies more to this farm system, because this farm system got so bad over the years that they needed guys that could rise quickly. They needed guys that had high floors. And that's kind of what they've targeted. I mean, if you just look at this draft, 13 of their last 28 selections were college seniors. 22 overall players were college seniors. They want guys that could rise quickly and that don't really carry much risk, because the bottom line is they just need guys right now. They need guys in their system. They don't have enough.
Well, Alden, if you are going to go after a high school guy, I guess it doesn't hurt if you're the Angels to go after a guy from Millville High School in New Jersey, as they did with Aaron Cox, the brother of Mike Trout's girlfriend. How about that connection?
That's the most bizarre story I've ever written, I think. I think, you know what, as close to Mike Trout's bloodlines as you can get as possible, these are not really bloodlines, but as close to Mike Trout's circle, I guess, just take it. Yeah. You know, whatever, man. Just take it.
I just wonder, do they go to the same barber in Millville that you checked out a few years ago when you went to Millville?
Jeez, Anthony, I hope not. I sure hope not.
Don't want to disappoint the folks out there. You saw the video of Alden at Mike Trout's with Mike Trout. I don't know if you can you call a woman a barber, a hairstylist. I don't know what it looked like, a barber shop.
I think she patterned herself after a hairstylist. Yes.
Okay. Well, if you saw the video, I just want everybody out there to know that Alden did not actually get his hair cut, which I was really disappointed when I found that out.
Why do you got to do that? Why do you have to ruin it for everybody, Anthony? Come on now.
Alden, thank you for joining us. I am joined by Greg Johns. And actually, Greg, as we record this, the Mariners are getting ready to wrap up a series here in Cleveland, where I am, and you're not. You stiffed us this week, Greg.
Yeah, I did. I stayed home in Seattle and covered the draft, catching up with the team in Houston tomorrow. So looking forward to getting back and seeing they're playing a little better on the road here, so good to see.
Absolutely. Yeah, they played well on the road in general, around 500 on the road and struggled at home. Obviously, the big struggle before they got to Cleveland was the offense. They scored three or less in 13 straight games, a franchise record, before breaking out in a big way against Trevor Bauer and the Indians on Wednesday night. But, Greg, what have you made of the offense this season in general? Obviously, it hasn't been as improved as hoped. In fact, I believe they're on pace to score significantly fewer runs than last year, about 70 fewer if the season were to continue at this pace. I know they don't expect it to, but what's your take on the offense this year?
Yeah, it's disappointing. I mean, they got everything they could possibly hope for from Nelson Cruz and didn't get anything to go with that for the first 5-6 weeks of the season. That was unfortunate because now they've kind of got their pitching squared away, but they're not getting enough runs to really support that. And went 2-9 on their last homestand, as you mentioned, and a lot of that was just not scoring the runs because their pitching hasn't been very good. The starting pitching has really been squared away despite a couple critical injuries to James Paxton and Sasha Iwakuma. So they've done what you expect with the Seattle club on the pitching end, and just not gotten that uplift from the offense. And now Cruz has been fallen off a little bit, cooled off a little bit, and missed last couple games with some back spasms. So, they got to get some other guys hitting. They did that last night, broke out with 9 runs, and it's certainly a key for them. They keep saying it's there. They keep saying, hey, we got what we need. We got guys here that have been there and done that, and they expect it to come around, but they certainly need to see it on the field.
Absolutely. And with Cruz, I mean, he was bound to cool off at some point, and I'm sure he'll get going to some degree at some point, especially once he gets through this back issue. But in a large sense, a lot of those first 18 home runs were wasted. And the big key here, obviously, is Robinson Cano. I had the chance to catch up with him this week here in Cleveland. And everybody knows that the statistics are not what you expect from that caliber of player. However, I do think there's some hope beyond the surface level numbers that we talked about. He's had a lot of hard hit balls. Going back to the beginning of May, the exit velocity off his bat is very much in line with some of the elite names in the game, Andrew McCutchen and Mike Trout. So it's not as if, while the slugging hasn't been there in his time with the Mariners, it's not like this guy is falling off a cliff and his bat speed has disappeared and he's not driving the ball. It seems like he has hit into some hard luck this year and obviously not hitting as frequently as the Mariners would like. But what's your take on Cano's season here to this point, Greg?
Yeah, I mean, to me, he's got to start going the other way more. I think that's where he really lived a lot last year. Pitching, taking the ball where he's pitched, just going in the left field with it. I think he maybe got a little too pull happy, and who knows, maybe sitting there with Nelson Cruz hitting home run after home run, he felt like he had to keep up a little bit. I don't know what those three guys' heads. He's too good a hitter to be doing what he's done. There's been some signs. I think he just needs to get back to sitting back on the ball a little bit, driving it the other way, and getting back to being Robinson Cano and using the whole field. And it's not that he's completely forgotten that. I just think he's gotten away from it some. There was a stretch there. He has hit some balls hard, but he also had a stretch of games where he was just rolling the ball over to first and second base pretty frequently. So he has not looked like Robinson Cano, and he's too good a hitter. He's too much in his prime to he's not just going to disappear on him. I have no doubt in my mind he's going to figure it out and get back to being a pretty darn good hitter and a big piece of that lineup. But they need it soon, and as we all know, baseball players go through this sometimes. Best players in the world, and as Cano told me a week or two ago, he says, I remind myself I'm human, and he is. He is no different than any other flesh and blood guy that steps up there and has some struggles sometimes. He's a guy that does know his swing very well. I expect he'll get that back and be the force they need. And as you mentioned, they did waste some of that those home runs. I was looking at a pretty interesting statistic, Logan Morrison with a 16-game hitting streak, and a guy you think is helping out, and you look at that 16-game hitting streak, he scored 2 runs. So this kind of goes to show you they're just not getting production up and down the lineup to take advantage of the guys that are hitting. It is – a lot of it's Cano, but a lot of it's going to be 1-9 to get this thing squared away.
Yeah, Cano, Lloyd McClendon had a great line on Cano. He said this is like watching Michael Jordan not able to hit a jump shot. He did have a couple encouraging moments the first game in Cleveland, two doubles, and had gone 20 games unbelievably without a double before that point. Maybe that's a sign of I know he's working on some stuff mechanically, so maybe that's a sign of him coming out of that. But you mentioned Logan Morrison. Him and Austin Jackson have really given some traction to the top of the order. As you said, it doesn't help much when they're on base and nobody's driving them in, but at least they're starting to get some stability in those first two spots.
Yeah, and they get that. And Kyle Seager's had a nice season. You know, he hasn't put up huge, huge numbers, but certainly kind of the steady Seager that you expect. And a grand slam yesterday. He's a guy who, you know, I think he's close to being where he wants to be. Cruz, obviously, in that spot. You get Cano going, and then you get a pretty good 2-3-4 or 3-4-5, depending on how they want to go with him. You know, Trumbo, they haven't gotten much out of yet, and the guy they expect will hit, you know, and certainly help lengthen that lineup out a little bit more. And, you know, they keep saying it. We've got the piece of Seth Smith, certainly a professional hitter. Brad Miller has shown signs of being a pretty good offensive force when he's going. And, you know, those are guys that can help you. It should be a pretty good lineup. You know, that's kind of what they built on. Austin Jackson up at the top and, you know, base doing some stuff. He has shown some signs of that in the last couple of weeks. So, you know, you keep saying it. They don't have to be world beaters offensively. They just have to be good enough to help out that pitching staff. And if they do that, that's a pretty good formula. But again, the thing with them, it just seems like everything has not clicked at the same time. And it's kind of when they've gotten starting rotation figured out and the hitting's doing a little better than the bullpen seems to have blipped. You know, Rodney went through a tough stretch and still is. They're trying to get him squared away. So, you know, you kind of got to get it all put together here. They got a pretty good stretch coming up. They're playing Houston six for the next 10 games, and a chance to make up some ground on them and get things going. So there's plenty of time, but you certainly got to start seeing it. You can't keep saying plenty of time too far into, you know, July. You start to get a little worried. So they got to get it going here in June and get certainly keep in contention and put themselves in a good position going down the stretch.
Well, if they are going to climb back into it, you have to imagine Taijuan Walker would be a big part of that. I had the chance to watch him in Cleveland here on Wednesday night, and he had scattered a lot of hits off him, but he bared down and got the outs when he needed. And in general, his last few starts have been way more encouraging than what we'd seen previously. And we know when this guy, with that electric high fastball that kind of jumps on hitters, when he has that working for him, he's really dangerous. Do you get the sense that the Walker's starting to round into form, Greg?
No question. His last three starts have been far more what we expected. And, you know, I go back in spring training and spring training, but he was electric in the spring, really everything you wanted to see out of the kid. And then he just got into the regular season, got a little haywire, and yeah, maybe he was overthrowing. You know, hard to know. He's still 22. He's still figuring things out. And he's going to have some games. He just can't have a long stretch of games like he had coming out of the gate. He looks comfortable now, and he is a guy with big-time stuff, you know, mid-90s fastball. And if he can get the off-speed stuff working with that, he's going to be pretty darn tough. And Paxton as well, before he went on the DL with a strained tendon in his finger, was pitching at the top of his game. So those are the young guys they counted on building around this season. They've had some other guys fill in. Ronis Elias has been excellent filling in for Ryu Kuma. And then brought up Mike Montgomery. He's kind of been a revelation his first two starts for them. Done a nice job filling in for Paxton. So they've pieced it together. Jay Happ having a very good season, the veteran they added. And Felix is Felix. So you just kind of keep rolling that rotation out there and doing what you do. Everybody always says, hey, you start with pitching, and you know they've got that rotation squared away, and that's a good place to start. So now, like we say, just fill in enough to make that work.
Yeah, get the pitching, and then hopefully score more than three runs. As we said earlier, Greg, you stiffed us. You didn't come to Cleveland. That's all LeBron James is talking about is where's Greg Johns, but it's for a good reason. You're covering the draft. Give me a roundup for the draft for the Mariners. Obviously, they didn't have a first-round pick because of Nelly Cruz signing. I believe they didn't go till, 60 overall. How do they feel about their overall haul despite that difficulty of not having a first-round pick?
They went a little pretty heavy on pitching, and people always say, why go heavy on pitching with a team that needs offense? Well, you got to look 3, 4, 5 years down the road, and they're not drafting for today. They're drafting for down the road. Their organization has gotten a little thin in the minors with pitching. They've promoted a lot of guys and made some some trades, given up some pretty good power arms to try to do some things here in the last year or two. So they definitely leaned a little more toward young arms, drafted a bunch of high school arms that they're very, very high on. But these are 18-year-old kids, and they're going to be 3, 4, or 5 years down the road. So they feel real good about it. Their first pick, Nick Niedert, a high school kid out of Georgia, and that was kind of where they started and kept going, drafted a couple of college arms as well. And some position players, Braden Bishop, a local kid from the University of Washington that they really like as a center fielder. So they picked up some, considering where they were in the draft, they feel pretty good about it. And, of course, you always want to see how that plays out down the road. But they like what they did with where they were in the draft.
All right. There you have it. I want to thank Greg Johns for joining us, talking about all things Mariners this week. I am pleased to be joined by Jane Lee to talk about an A's team that matched their third worst 60-game start since moving to Oakland in 1968. The last time they lost as many as 37 of their first 60 was way back in 1994. So obviously things have not gone well for the A's. And Jane, it's only natural now that we're past the first-year player draft, start to think about the trade deadline. And a lot of people are pointing to the A's as a club that has, you know, several nice assets as far as that market is concerned. And, you know, with the worst record in the American League. So are we getting close to seeing Billy Bean make some moves on that front?
I think we're getting really close. I mean, the fact that it's nearing mid-June, you know, I think this is a team that about a month ago, even as things were kind of spiraling, they still felt that they could turn things around and that they had the type of talent, you know, that could do that, but we're just not seeing it. You know, last week they went into Detroit, swept the Tigers, but then they go to Boston and get swept by the Red Sox. So it's just they can't find any momentum or, you know, keep it. And, you know, they get their first walk-off win of the season last night. In years past, they've already had probably 10 at this point. And, you know, every time it happens, they're thinking, okay, this is when we turn it around. And we just haven't seen it to this point. And some of it has had to do with the injuries they've had, but, you know, I think part of it, too, I mean, it's also the product on the field. I mean, you look at what they had last year and the changes they made in the offseason, and it's just I think they have to look at it and kind of admit that it really hasn't worked out and it's time to make a change because they can't go into the offseason, you know, hanging on to Kazmir and Clippard and Zobrist and not get anything for those guys. So I think you know, at least one or two, if not all three, will be dealt here shortly.
Well, you mentioned the injuries, and with Zobrist in particular, coming back from that knee surgery as quickly as he did, you know, he hasn't been moving around that well. He hasn't been swinging the bat that well. Teams, of course, know the value he has as a guy who can play everywhere, and there's probably not a contender out there that can't benefit from that. But do you think, you know, he might have to show more on the field here with the A's before that happens, before a team commits to him, or what's your sense of that?
I do think that his trade value could be dipping the more he is exposed these days. I don't think the A's would not have put him out there if they didn't feel he was ready, but at the same time, you can't trade a guy if he's not on the field. And they do know that he does have extreme value. You know, it's just for you know, contending clubs looking for someone off the bench or someone to plug in at any which position, which he's able to do. And, you know, though he is moving around slow, he doesn't look himself. I think for him, it's more of a mental thing than anything. I actually don't think it's a physical thing. I think he's just, he's so caught up in, you know, worrying about the knee and maybe re-injuring it again. And you've seen it here recently, just a few of the slides he's made, sometimes where he's not sliding because, you know, you can just tell he's a little scared and he's holding back a little. And I think, you know, he is getting exposed here. And I think the more teams see that, maybe, you know, I don't think they back off. But I think, you know, his trade value is not what it was at the beginning of the season. But at the same time, I mean, that is a guy that could be really valuable you know, for a contending club. And I think he could be dealt first for all those reasons and mostly because, you know, they need to deal him sooner than later before he is, you know, more exposed.
Well, Zobrist, of course, is a special talent with his ability to play anywhere, but there's I don't know, there's a more special player in the game right now than Pat Vendetti. as a switch pitcher, and what a weapon that can be if he's effective, which he's been so far. First of all, Jay, I mean, just what a great story, not just because he's a switch pitcher, but he's a guy who obviously persevered for a long time in the Yankees system, so to finally get up to the big leagues is a big deal for him. How fun is this story to be around, and how much must Bob Melvin be loving this? This is every manager's dream to have a guy you can throw from both sides like this.
Yeah, I loved what Melvin said the other day. He said it's like a new toy, and you're the only one who has it. No one else has it. And I thought that was great. It really is. It's just so cool. I mean, we saw it all of spring training, but then to actually, you know, see him come up, you know, make his debut in a place like Fenway. I mean, you never tire of seeing it because it's so remarkable. I mean, you think about how hard it is to play this game with one arm, let alone two, and the fact that he's so effective from both sides. I mean, like he says all the time, you know, because people still think, well, is this a gimmick? Is he just doing it for show? But, I mean, he said he wouldn't be in the big leagues without, you know, this ability to throw with both arms because, you know, if he was just throwing from the right side or the left side, he really wouldn't have, you know, he wouldn't be as effective because he needs that left-on-left, right-on-right advantage. And, I mean, just what a great person, too. You know, you really – you kind of appreciate it more when you know just how hard he's, you know, worked over. I mean, he spent close to 8 full seasons in their minor leagues and never at any point really thought about backing away, knew this is what he wanted to do, and to actually see him do it and do it well so far is really cool.
It is very cool. And we had some cool numbers from StatCast, MLB.com. That showed Vendetti's really two different pitchers. He's a different guy from the right than he is from the left. The right-handed Vendetti has more velocity, less spin on the ball, more extension. So he's given teams two different looks, you know, within an inning, which is only adds to his value. And Jane, Terry Francona here in Cleveland is a lot like Melvin in that he values versatility. We mentioned Vendetti to him the other day, and so what if you had a Vendetti and a Zobrist on your roster? He's like, I might get aroused at that thought. And lo and behold, the Indians went out and took Ryan Perez in the 12th round, who follows in Vendetti's footsteps as a switch pitcher, ambidextrous pitcher. So there you go.
I'm sure Francona was, after that day, was like, you better go and get this guy.
Exactly. Yeah, he said, go and get me this guy. I could use him in a few years. But regarding the draft, the A's took Richie Martin with the 20th overall pick, University of Florida shortstop, who I like, Jane, that he pointed out right away that he subscribed to those money ball philosophies of working counts and getting on base. So he'll fit right in there.
He really will. I mean, he was very quick to say, you know, I've seen money ball. I know how Billy Bean works. And, you know, I think he said multiple times, you know, my best ability is working counts and getting on base. And he kind of, you know, pounded that point, which was interesting. But, I mean, he's a very well-spoken kid. You can tell just a polished guy all the way around, you know, as a person and as a player. And I think, you know, I don't know that it's a coincidence that 35 of the A's 40 picks were from the collegiate level. I mean, you know, they might say it's a product of the draft, and partially it was. But, you know, I think their system's kind of been depleted in recent years, especially at shortstop. And so to get the kind of help that can help them sooner than later was important to them. And, you know, seeing them take two collegiate shortstops from, you know, one of the best collegiate divisions in the country, I don't think that, you know, they'll say they take the best available player at the time, but I think it was good to see them go out and do that after, you know, this is a team that traded Addison Russell and Daniel Robertson in just a few months' time. So to see them get that talent back was important for them. And, you know, I do think, you know, Richie Martin is just kind of a really polished player, and particularly defensively, because, you know, a lot of times coming out of college, you're not really sure if a guy can stick at that position, but they do see him there long-term. And, you know, they said multiple times there's nothing they don't like about his defense.
Well, yeah, it's the college guys, sometimes you might sacrifice some upside, but what you give up on upside, you might get back in just safety and stability and knowing what you're going to get. So A's helped their system from that standpoint, and maybe they'll help their system more as we get closer to the trade deadline, and maybe they'll part with some of these guys who are pending free agents. But I want to thank Jane Lee. All right, that's a wrap. I want to thank everybody for tuning in. This has been MLB.com Extras, American League West edition.